Hey, I have a secret.
Uh-huh.
I use Secret Whole Body Deodorant because more than just my armpits stink.
Oh, can I use it where my bra rubs under my...
Oh, yeah.
And what about down there? You know, my...
Totally. 4 out of 5 gynecologists would recommend it. So I tried it, and now I get 72 hours of freshness. From my pits to my...
Ooh, I love that it's a spray.
Me too. And it comes in sticks and creams too. Go get your Secret Whole Body Deodorant.
The Boston Marathon, presented by Bank of America, has thousands of runners running for thousands of reasons.
I'm running to raise money for Achilles International so amputee athletes can keep running too.
For every mother counts, because all women deserve access to quality maternity care.
For St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and every kid with cancer who just wants to be a kid again.
Join Bank of America in supporting this year's runners. Give if you can at bofa.com/help-a-cause. References to charitable organizations is not endorsement by Bank of America Corporation. Copyright 2024.
This podcast is supported by Progressive, a leader in RV insurance. RVs are for sharing adventures with family, friends, and even your pets. So if you bring your cats and dogs along for the ride, you'll want Progressive RV insurance. They protect your cats and dogs like family by offering up to $1,000 in optional coverage for vet bills in case of an RV accident, making it a great companion for the responsible pet owner who loves to travel. See Progressive's other benefits and more when you quote RV insurance at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet injury is an additional coverage and subject to policy terms.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Your spring is about to get a lot more power with the Home Depot. Get gas-like power from mowing, trimming, and blowing with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system starting at just $89. Mowing power that can take on a third of an acre with one charge. Trimming power with up to 2 hours of runtime. And blowing power with 110 miles per hour of clearing force. All on one interchangeable battery. Get cordless gas-like power for the entire lawn with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system. Only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Beacon 23, Season 1, Episode 3, Why Can't We Go On As 3 is over, but we are just getting started over here at Post Show Recaps. Welcome back, my friends. It is I, Rich Liberto, DM Philly, out here on the internet, back with you again, and very excited to be talking about the third episode of Beacon 23. I, of course, am not alone. I am joined by the second of our triumvirate, Corey B. Corey, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm glad we were able to get together again. I just want to keep, I don't really have like a theme for this time, but I just really wanted to keep the theme of like me getting worried that you weren't going to show back up again, going for a third time, because I did that the last two podcasts. But oh, yeah. maybe because you found out that I went AWOL from podcasting for a while after I did the Halo series coverage, and
once I hacked into your files and saw the results of what happened in your last podcast, you left everybody to get flanked and destroyed. I was a little bit uncertain whether or not to show up again. Do we have an invisible third in here, Corey? Is there like an AI listening to us? I know you are the master of the bots. Is there like a bot in here in this podcast studio with us?
You know, there should be. I've never made like a podcast recording bot before, but I would like that. I think there should be. It would really be on brand. We could get like a picture of a robot just for like the video and just like put it on the screen somewhere. I think that'd be great.
We should. Yeah, I can see maybe like the BSG Down the Hatch logo of like Bot Wiggler could be joining us potentially. Yes. Corey, it's the third episode of Beacon 23. What'd you think off the top, just generally?
I liked it. I didn't know where this one was going to go. I thought this was going to be like a little bit of a like a quieter episode. And then by the end, it turned out not to be. And it again, like the coolest thing this show does is it introduces us to these really complex characters with these really complex backstories and relationships, and it makes it hard to really discern who's right, because even though one person might be more right than other people, everybody has a very viable reason for doing the things that they're doing in terms of how they're relating to each other. So all those dynamics really played nicely for me. I wasn't sure at the beginning, but by the end and when the dust settled, I was pretty excited by what had happened.
Yeah, same here. You know, I was looking at the title of the episode, which is the thing that I didn't necessarily do very much of prior to podcasting. And so why can't we go on as three? I was inherently thinking of the dynamic wherein we have one of our AIs kind of shelved to a degree and like, okay, there's three of them. They're going to have to work their things out. I did not expect an actual third organic entity to like come into the arena, but I loved the way that we played with tension and secrecy and the kind of familiarity of relationships that are developing across this episode. It just held a vibe that the first two didn't have that I think I really liked a lot in terms of like the humanity inside the beacon that we got and the way that we explored the dynamics, the interpersonal dynamics of these three people.
Yep. And just like the last episode, it's like this character comes in, they flesh out this character in immense ways that make you really understand a lot right? of the deep inner motivations of the character, and now they're dead. But they having left us a much better understanding of the relationship between Halen and Aster in the process. So they're like narrative tools.
For sure. I'm really feeling that vibe that you talked about last week in the episode two coverage in terms of the Hugh Howey short stories, right?
Yeah.
Like these individual episodes feel really contained in a certain way, even though they're still very interconnected and we are like coming right off the heels of what we got in episode two with the Wreckers. But I love the way that each one of them is thematically and narratively so contained into its own story with the beginning and a middle and an end. I've got a bit of a long, short recap here. I'm trying to keep them concise, but I feel like there's just so much happening in the subtext. So why don't I crack into that and then we could talk through the episode proper.
Sounds good.
Okay. So we open with Halen cleaning up after the attack and Aster realizing that his condition was triggered by the minerals. He and Aster end up going to sit against the beacon to get altered by the side effects. And Aster reveals that the medallion, which matches the pattern on the minerals, came from her mother. They end up talking about the lighthouse painting and Halen explains he's always wondered about the fate of the man in it. The pair of them send the body bags out the airlock. And as the power goes out on the beacon, he explains this happens from time to time. They discuss the QTA and Halen notes that the QTA sent Wreckers to blow up Aster's ship. She ends up asking if he knows why he's having these visions, explaining that it's clearly connected to the rocks and her pendant. And Harmony ultimately gets some of the lights onto the ship. Halen goes to reset some breakers, discovering an airlock's been breached, and he is attacked. Aster breaks it up, and then we meet this newcomer who claims himself to be an ISA agent named Coley. She and Aster know one another, and she actually works for the QTA. Coley ultimately says that Aster brought whatever happened here on herself because she demanded that the pair of them were assigned to this job to begin with. Aster brings her to show her the minerals and says that they're going to need to drop off Halen, that she's agreed to give him a ride, and Coley argues about it. Halen calls the pair of them to the bridge where they make note of a dark matter obstruction, which is going to trap them on the beacon for 4 or 5 days. Coley is debating leaving now, but Aster says that it'll be good to give the two of them time to get acquainted. Coley and Halen chat about the military and she questions him about why he's here on the beacon. They end up discussing Aster and Coley says they're close and demands that Halen tell her once the lanes are clear. She then goes to access the beacon computers and Bart responds. Coley threatens to permanently disable him unless he does everything that she asks. And he agrees. She asks him for everything he has on Halen, and Bart is very excited to comply with that request. Halen ultimately asking Aster to sit down as he begins massaging her. Coley sees the pair of them, and he stops as she walks away frustrated. Aster goes to find her and explain that there's nothing going on between she and Halen before admitting that she did end up having to kill one of the Wreckers. Coley ends up asking why she didn't admit that Halen was an AWOL soldier, and Aster explains they're connected by the rocks. Coley says Aster is asking her to go against all of her orders and all of her training, and she seems quite reluctant to do so. The pair of them start drinking, and they go to sit beneath the beacon as Halen finds them kissing, leaving them for the night. The next morning, Coley and he chat, and she asks if he knows where he wants to be dropped off. Aster is quite pleased to see them getting along, but Coley ends up sneaking back onto her ship to send an information request on all of Halen's records. It's at this point Aster calls for Harmony, noting that it doesn't make sense that she's become expendable after 10 years as a perfect employee. Harmony advocates that the shipwreck was an accident, but Aster questions that, climbing into her life raft and beginning to search it vigorously. At this point, Halen detects a ping that he says is consistent with his old ship, which makes no sense because it should be out of range. Aster reinforces that he has a ride out of here with them and that she'll make sure of it. She ends up making dinner for the three of them and telling old stories, but Coley launches into a story of her own, one where she claims Aster will always let you down. She explains that Coley is the one who ended up bringing Aster into the QTA as her partner. She says that Aster uses people, including her. And Halen tries to leave, but Coley presses him on why he went AWOL. Aster just watches from the sidelines as Coley digs in further and as Bart pull up the report on his last combat operation, where he supposedly abandoned his entire group to die. He flashes back to the operation as she explains that any soldier should spit in his face, and he then leaves. Aster finding him against the beacon, he expresses guilt over the death of his squad, and she says that they were both meant to come here, though he thinks that's bullshit. Coley ultimately ends up ready to go, and she explains that the mission has been upgraded, stating Aster's part is over, but Aster argues that the pair of them are not cleaning up Halen. He ends up sneaking into Coley's bag as they're talking, and he gets his hands on her access key. Coley thinks that he's after the rocks, and Aster then pushes, questioning how many oxygen tanks should have been in the sleep pod, revealing that hers had extras, meaning that the QTA knew her ship was going to be destroyed. It's at this point Coley finally admits that it was all a setup because the company's psych evaluation suggested Solomon wouldn't let a foreign ship dock on the beacon, but he would rescue a lone survivor of a crash. Coley at this point drugs Aster before she realizes it, and Halen gets knocked out as he's trying to enter her ship. Coley grabs her sidearm and runs to find him, and just as she is about to shoot the downed man, Aster emerges to stab her in the liver. Coley asks her to go get meds, but Aster merely holds her friend as she bleeds to death.
No, she holds her pretty tight.
Choke. Yeah, on the floor. Right. That was a lot, Corey, but it was a lot of moving parts, I feel like, in the details here. The culmination of the episode, not what I expected, as it seems for a minute like Aster is almost in like a fugue state after she stabs Coley, but then she officially chokes her friend of many years out and kills her. I often am like riveted by the end of the episode at the beginning of the podcast, so humor me for a minute. Like, how'd you feel about all of this?
Yeah, this whole relationship between Aster and Coley, obviously from the beginning, there was a little bit of mistrust there the second that Coley enters in and tries to take out Halen. By the way, Coley's spiky helmet was like the weirdest, coolest thing. And then how it like expanded out and she tried to headbutt him. I'm like, okay, this is wild.
Yeah, the helmet was really interesting. As soon as they show up, there's a little bit of like, we've been dealing with these AIs, so I wonder, like, is this a droid? Is this a cyborg?
Right.
What the hell is going on here? But like, nope, just a soldier in a combat suit. Pretty cool.
Well, what I appreciated about it too is that a lot of times when you see a costume design like that, it just has no meaning to it, right? Like you see a spiky helmet with no visor and you're like, it's supposed to just be some futuristic thing. So I loved it when the spikes expanded out and she tried to slam him with it. I was like, okay, at least it's practical, you know? But yeah, no, this whole relationship and their past together and sort of the reveal that Aster sort of, you know, as Coley mentioned, she has these conquests. And of course, a lot of that could just be Coley's perspective on the matter. But it does seem like we've already seen Aster tell these, you know, these far-fetched tales that are very convincing to the people she tells them to. And it definitely seems like she has this very manipulative side to people. And even in this episode, a lot of the makeout session in front of the GWB on the top of the Beacon seems to have had some end. Coley even says that it does, and she says it's not about that. And Coley says it's cute that you think that it has nothing to do with that, right? Like, like it's there's this very interesting picture painted about Aster, even though you sort of want to root for her in the end and want Halen and Aster to stay together. And ultimately what Coley reveals is far worse, but there's still an interesting dynamic. Yeah.
You're spot on in the way that Aster is like a master of the art of seduction, and seduction's not always necessarily, you know, a sexual endeavor or right. not sexual conquest in that way. I mean, she very much is seducing these people with these stories that she tells. It's almost like, it's a technique that gets used in high control groups a lot and like cults and stuff like this mirroring in communication where you end up like reading a person and kind of like feeding back their vibes to them. And I think that it was all really enhanced for me, the dynamic between Coley and Aster, because of the kind of opening act of the episode wherein we see Aster and Halen like really bonding, right? They've become like a lot closer. That whole, you know, you had talked about the GWB and this notion of like, oh, we saw Halen sitting there, and with the context of what you have from the book, it's clear that he's being altered by it. And that went clear over my head on the first pass. But so it's so obvious as we do it now. The two of them are full on like loopy. They are high as kites looking at this thing. And there's this comfort between them. Again, like in terms of the intangibles in this episode, there's just this vibe of familiarity that is building between the two of them that feels maybe a little bit quick, but also authentic to me in terms of the way that people bond under duress. And these two are under incredible duress as they're both like mistrusting each other. They only really have these AIs to rely on, and Halen clearly can't rely on Bart whatsoever. They've just like dealt with these attackers, and they've bonded over the experience that they've had here the last couple of days. So that tracks to the way that Aster engages with people. And God, it is so fun to see Lena Headey playing this character, Corey. It's like amazing. She's really, really good. I like Aster a lot.
Yeah, she's crushing it. And I agree. You could say something about the pacing with how quickly they're bonding, but I absolutely agree. I think that with everything that's happened between the two of them, and there still is some mistrust, even the massage, she didn't want to sit down in the chair at first because she didn't fully trust him despite their... So it's a more complicated relationship than it even still appears to be on the surface. And ultimately, like, yes, there's only, what, 8 episodes of the season, so of course they are going to have to push them together a little faster, but I don't think they do it in a way that makes me scratch my head or anything, right? Like, it all makes sense to me based on their acting and the dynamic, you know, nature of their relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. Amidst what you had discussed, some of the reference that you gave us from the book and beyond the GWB, which I really loved seeing them keep like going back to it, using it as this kind of area that we know, like their guards are down, they're all becoming maybe like a bit more honest, a bit more altered at the very least. But the lighthouse painting that was there, and I know you had noted previously that this is a really important beat for Halen, especially as somebody who's been here. So we delve into a little bit where he posits early on that he's always wondered about the fate of this guy, and then he makes this kind of bold statement at the end. All I know is like, it took me this whole time to realize I am that guy trapped on the lighthouse, and I am not going to get crushed by that wave, the forces that be around him. So how did that all land for you? Like, do you feel like there's more to mine out of that, or is that about what you were expecting?
I think that it's about that deep in terms of his relationship to it. In the book, he actually sends requests back down to, in the book, it's NASA, right? And actually tries to get information about this guy, and then regrets knowing the true fate of what happened to him. So that's the only beat that has not really happened in earnest yet about the lighthouse picture, but that symbolism is really important, and I will not be surprised if they just keep going back to that picture because it's such a symbolic and meaningful gesture to him and a metaphor. And I think the more that he looks at it, especially under the influence of the GWB, the more he's going to connect to it. And by the way, on that note, I thought that there was a really interesting parallel between like the highs of the GWB and the influence of alcohol in the future scene where they got into this huge conflict too, and sort of how their relationships between the three of them were sort of bettered by one and significantly worsened by the other.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, as Coley and Aster go back up there, they bring their alcohol and they're drinking. And there is like a drunkenness to the way that they're kind of interacting and behaving up there. They're all like loopy and silly and happy and like loving, right? But I think it's a really salient point because as they're sitting in the kitchen and Aster is cooking for all of them, I really like Aster's like dress shirt that also was sleeveless. Nice touch.
Yeah, like, that's good.
That's good characterization, you know. And yeah. Coley even like kind of condemning her for it. She dresses up real nice, but she's still just like this dirt person from this poor planet or whatever. But the alcohol brings out the worst in them. It does. I mean, it like feeds Coley's, you know, it I should say disarms her resistance, and she just unloads all of this baggage that she's clearly been carrying for decades in terms of Aster. So just to like delve in a little bit more there, we talked previously about the QTA and defining that relationship. We get a lot more clarity here where like, you know, Coley shows up masquerading as ISA, but they're both QTA and they're a team. Clearly, Coley says like, I'm the one who recruited her. I got her on this job. She used to work for these other kind of geologists is what she's explaining, mineral specialists and stuff. But they're like this dynamic duo. Seemingly, I kind of like inferred that the QTA appears to be like the military branch or some militant branch. Like, do you have any more clarity there? Because I'm still a little confused as to what exactly this organization is. They keep talking about the company and it clearly is nefarious and we shouldn't trust it. But
no, except that I feel like they're definitely under the table, whatever they're doing. They're definitely nefarious. I'm not sure how legitimate it is. I mean, the fact that they have to pose as ISA is a little telling for me to think that they're maybe not the most respected organization out there, but they certainly could be a military branch or something that has like more of a legitimate front in their seedier dealings are sort of under the table. But to that end, I think it's interesting because, you know, they obviously have the information about the medical records of Halen. They obviously have, you know, managers, Harmony's aware of them, right? Mm-hmm. And ultimately the relationships between these people, right? Especially, this is actually an interesting beat about the QTA because Coley's the manager, right? That much has been made clear. And of course they have a very personal relationship between the two of them. But what I thought was interesting, you mentioned before that Aster has this air of like this skill for seduction, right? And ultimately, when she tells Coley that she killed someone, Coley says, that's what I'm supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So I find it interesting that in some, no matter how evil the organization is, the manager is the one that's killing. And the subordinates are the ones who are doing more of the diplomatic work, right? At least from these two, it appears that way. And it's definitely still a good characterization of Aster just knowing that, but also of the QTA a little bit, that's sort of how their ranks work.
Yeah, that's really interesting. This whole note, I thought that was really important because the implication there is it seemed like this is the first person Aster's ever had to kill, right? Which presumably makes Coley the second person that she has to kill, which is really heavy, right? Yep. And she ends up using the same knife, which I found kind of insightful.
The nano blade. Yeah. She talks about how she's always wanted one in the episode where she picks it up. And it's like, well, she's doing maybe you're going to regret that. Yeah.
She's doing work with it now. End the job with it, but she certainly started it. So that all feels really weighted, and I think especially like coupled with this implication where she's talking to Harmony about it doesn't make sense. I've been a perfect employee for 10 years. Like, why am I expendable now? So I just want to circle to Coley's story here of Solomon wouldn't basically let another ship dock, but it was a setup. We sacrificed everybody else because we knew that they would be able to pick you up and you were never really in danger. Like, there were extra oxygen tanks in there just to make sure in case he didn't let you in that I would have showed up a few hours later and like found you floating around in space is kind of like the insinuation there. Do we believe that? Should we take that at face value?
So I thought the extra oxygen tanks were just because normally for these sleep pods, they wouldn't have enough oxygen for her to be suspended in space long enough for Solomon to rescue her. I don't think that she was able to make it there in time to rescue her. I think she was just saying, I had you covered, in a more broad sense. That's sort of how I took it anyway.
I'm kind of fixating because there's a point where then Coley like retorts, you were never in danger. You were never in danger, right? And that insinuates more. I mean, that could just be one of the bullshit platitudes that people offer people. It is absolutely like just based in hope.
Right. That's sort of what I took it as, but I could see maybe she had some, she was implying there was some fallback plan or something like that. But very clearly, I don't think that was going to work because at the very beginning of the first episode, Halen saw that she had 7 minutes left of oxygen. And which I don't think was an estimate, and maybe it was, but I didn't think so. And that's how long he had to get to her. So I think that you would think that she'd be in the vicinity by the time that Halen gets to her. That fallback, right? But this whole beat, this whole story is fascinating to me because in the first couple episodes, I was mentioning how it didn't make sense, right? Like if the Wreckers. If you know the rocks the whole time were in the beacon, so why would the Wreckers hack the beacon to stop the ship and blow up the ship?
Yep.
If that's never where the rocks were going to be, so this actually I wasn't expecting this, but it actually ties that loose end up very cleanly to say it was a ploy where we sacrificed this entire huge ship and 7 people's lives just to get you to be rescued by Solomon because he wouldn't have let you in otherwise. And really ties things together well.
I couldn't agree more, right? I mean, I think in the doubling of it, because you know that the QTA still got Coley coming, presumably to get Astra off the beacon and get their hands on the minerals. And this is a manager in the QTA, whereas the Wreckers are just here ostensibly to deal with like the ship. And the Wreckers did say we were supposed to stay in the debris field. Like we weren't supposed to come onto the beacon, right? So the way that like the QTA is compartmentalizing the actual tasks, that feels really pointed too. Like the Wreckers aren't aware that they're QTA agents on the ship or survivors from the crash or this like manager coming to get that, like it's really fascinating the way that they kind of segment the information.
This podcast is supported by Progressive, a leader in RV insurance. RVs are for sharing adventures with family, friends, and even your pets. So if you bring your cats and dogs along for the ride, you'll want Progressive RV insurance. They protect your cats and dogs like family by offering up to $1,000 in optional coverage for vet bills in case of an RV accident, making it a great companion for the responsible pet owner who loves to travel. See Progressive's other benefits and more when you quote RV insurance at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet injury is an additional coverage and subject to policy terms.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So I want to talk about the mineral a little bit because there's this small scene in the opening kind of section where Aster ultimately, this is what I think I saw, seems to be looking through some type of like microscope at the minerals, presumably.
I think so.
And she sees like this crystalline structure. I'm like picturing it as like some kind of like a, you know, geological like formation. It looks like a crystal. And then when she looks at the pendant that she's wearing, it is exactly the same type of like crystal and structure, right? And she's very thick fixated on this and is going to come back to this point that Coley is like so resistant to, that no, Halen and I are connected through the rocks. Like, he really doesn't care about the rocks, but he should care about the rocks. And she's kind of like pushing him, like, don't you want to know why you're having these visions? Like, what's going on here, Corey? There's such like a thing in the subtext that I'm a little uncertain if like I'm perceiving it accurately.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me. And before I just directly answer that question, there's something else that I think sort of adds to this conversation.
Yeah, right?
Because
please.
I think this all goes to the sort of the angle of how Aster told Halen that, as you mentioned, they are both there for a reason. And yes. I do you remember, you know, the episode 2, I think it was, on the podcast, I mentioned that there was a shot of a woman when he was hallucinating on about those minerals. Mm-hmm. It was a woman with blonde hair in sort of like this spacesuit with two lights on top of it. Do you remember seeing a woman who was blonde in a spacesuit with two lights on top of it during this episode?
No.
Because it's in his flashback when he's flashing back to this woman, right?
His soldiers, and he talks about she and I went way back, right?
Yeah, Gashad, I think her name is. Yeah. Yep. And it's her. It's 100% the woman that was in his vision, his like theoretically non-PTSD backed vision.
Yep.
When he sees these minerals, it's her. It's Gashad, the woman who we saw the flashback of when he was thinking about her and sort of being called out when he said, me and her go way back. That's mm-hmm. the woman that the minerals give him a vision of in episode 2. So I think about that. I have no idea what that means, but I think about the idea of that line that you and I are here for a reason. I think about there's this microscope scene where she's got this necklace with the same symbol on it. And then there's Halen, who comes from this military background where something awful happened that he says is more complicated than the story says. Mm-hmm. And now the minerals are giving him flashbacks, just him, about a woman who was in his company who died. And you got to think, like, we don't know. I don't know how to put this together yet, but I do think that both of those things are sort of bolstering on this hypothesis that Aster says that we're meant to be here. Like, we specifically are here for a reason.
Yeah, I think that that's a great call. There's certainly like this otherworldly element to the minerals, right? Yeah. I mean, we get it a very tiny bit of Aster even talking to Coley. Coley like calls it, oh, glowy stuff, which I love when characters in shows use terms that like people would use. They don't necessarily have like the glossary definition of whatever.
That's how we called it on the podcast.
Exactly. Right.
Like, yeah, right? For sure.
And Aster's like, yeah, it shouldn't even be there, right? But there's this dynamic to it. And Aster was so fascinated by it. The clarification that she's got this like geological background, that she worked for other like kind of small mining organizations, and this is really her field of expertise to a degree, is pretty insightful. But I'm so fascinated, right? Like, because Aster's told us so many falsehoods, and I think we have to like parse whether or not we believe what she's saying when she says these things. But the notion, my mother gave me this pendant, and the symbol on the pendant very much matches this kind of like crystal formation within the material. This material then is like inspiring these visions of this person from Halen's past, and the idea that they're like connected through this. I'm just so fascinated by what all of that means, but I'm glad that I like perceived it accurately, because there's like this is not like a second monitor show. Like, stuff's happening pretty quickly, you know?
Really
easy to like miss some of these tiny details as we're kind of moving through it.
Yep. And on that note, you know, we mentioned that Aster has told, you know, she's told some tall tales in the past. Something that we do get confirmation of is that she really is from Menelaus. Yes. And that, or at the very least, that would be pretty convenient for Coley to just happen to say the same story that she lied about, right? So she almost definitely is from there. And that's telling too, because her mom presumably and her would both have been from Menelaus. Menelaus being the first colony that was cut off because the beacons stopped working and they sort of perished because they didn't get supplies and food. And part of me wonders, we already saw this beacon fail and it was sort of related to the minerals. So there could be some connection there too. Maybe the story of Menelaus might have something to do with these rocks, just like maybe Halen has some connection to the rocks from his past as well.
Yeah.
Just throwing things out there, bud.
That's a really good point. That's a very, very good point. One that I hadn't necessarily reflected on before now. I mean, I certainly can imagine the implication of her mother having something to do with these minerals and like Halen's mission having something to do with these minerals, perhaps those people being affected by it. But the connectivity of the failing of the beacon seems really insightful as well.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I could see coming up from under the surface at some point.
Yeah, we will track, I guess, as we continue. So the AIs, let's talk about the AIs a little bit. Bart is like in this weird still like fugue state. He's been like shut down. We get the insinuation from Coley, like as soon as she shows up, you know how I feel about AI. And then she just goes and like threatens Bart, the like continued kind of resistance for Harmony to just comply to like Bart's demands, as it were, of like, I'm not the boss of you. The people are the boss of both of us. It's like this really kind of humorous subtext that's happening in their interactions through all of it. Bart going through his whole like reboot secrets into Shakespeare or whatever. He's pretty much still just like lingering in the background, but he feels really dangerous still to me.
He's still
really fixated on this like Halen needs to die trip, man.
Well, and it's so interesting because Harmony, to your point, like has, because we asked about this too. Honestly, I think this episode actually answered so many of our questions, even if it only started here from previous pods, but like Harmony even says, because we're like, don't they have footage of like, you know, what happened when Solomon died? And they did. And Harmony said, I reviewed it and it was an accident. And it was pretty clearly, irrefutably an accident. Mm-hmm. And which is an interesting thing to drop just like in a line of dialogue. So there might be more to that. But ultimately, Bart, you know, we can't hear Bart because Bart's still silenced at this point. But very through the beeps and boops, like very clearly was not happy with that response. Bart is still, perhaps more so than before, unhinged and very willing to break protocol and help Coley the second that she mentions Halen's name, like incredibly dangerous. I think Halen absolutely was in the right to keep Bart relatively shut down over the course of this episode.
Yeah, I'm really just fascinated by the dynamic with the AIs, especially because Bart is so intrinsically tethered to the beacon. And as we see things like failing and breaking down in the beacon, the lights going off, like it's an issue. It takes a while for Harmony to get any of them back on. And then Halen's got to go like actually trip breakers. And presumably if Bart were like in the loop with the team here, all of this would be a lot easier to manage, right? Like the scenario where like the beacon itself, I think to a degree, we could imagine is like a hostile entity that is not like welcoming to having them here, right? And the further that Aster like digs into Halen's camp, which is I think very much what this episode is exploring, right? Aster like has got this absolute dedication, like, no, I've made a promise, you're gonna get out of here, I'm gonna give you a ride. And Halen opens with like, I don't know if that's your call, and we just continue to double down on this idea, like, nope, I'm gonna get you out of here, I will get you out of here. So now presumably the two of them have a ship. Does that change our expectation of how things are gonna work here?
Well, they can't get into it.
I guess that's a very good point.
Very clearly, like, blasted Halen. But it's certainly possible that that could be something that they're willing to explore moving forward. Trying, how do you get into the ship and maybe exploring its secrets once you're inside? But back to your point on Harmony real quick. I actually thought it was interesting that Harmony was, like, sort of more on Halen's side this time than before when talking to Bart because of those things. She still didn't trust him, but also she sort of seemed to have a more independence from Aster too. That was the only other point I wanted to make on Harmony, is that she questioned his trust of Halen as much as she did, but she also questioned her doubt for the QTA. There's a point where Coley is specifically calling for Harmony directly. There's a point where Harmony is saying, hey, you should trust Manager Coley on this one. And ultimately she lets Aster do her thing, but it's sort of additional cracks between the human and the AI side of things, even for Harmony, which I don't know how well that'll build up, but it's really clearly showing that Harmony is not just, I'm going to do whatever you ask for AI, even though she tells Bart that that's what he's supposed to be.
Yeah, it's a really compelling point. I found myself deeply questioning, because as Coley's dying, she's really calling out Harmony to like print medication, right?
Right.
Like print one of these patches up. So I found myself deeply questioning whether or not we've had this term of Harmony as like Aster's personal AI, right? And is that literally her personal AI, or is that her personal AI like given to her by the QTA, right? Like presumably this woman comes from a background that's pretty impoverished and small. She doesn't have a lot, right? They talk about this big gambling win of a weekend and like coming up with all these qubits and kind of living high life for a couple of days while she goes on these conquests. But whether or not Harmony's dedication is to the QTA or to Aster first, is she like a piece of like QTA equipment that Aster has like requisitioned for the job? Because again, back to this dynamic where Coley is the manager, but Coley doesn't have an AI, and Coley does know, I don't like AI. Like we're in full Mandalorian territory here. Nonetheless, like that was a really interesting kind of juxtaposition of like the leader of this unit not having like autonomy over the support staff, whereas her subordinate does, right?
Yeah, and that's an interesting take. Obviously, you can justify Coley not having her own AI based on her opinion of AI, but at the same time, yeah, the fact that she doesn't have control of Harmony. So is Harmony, like you said, requisitioned, or is she personal? And either way, what's going on with the QTA? And I'm really curious. It's one of the biggest sort of things that I hope that I get to learn about soon. That's not what I said last episode, but I feel like it is now.
Yeah, I am too. I'm really, really intrigued by this organization because we have the reference of them as like the company. And Aster comes to this revelation of like, why would I become expendable after so long? Where if we take Coley at face value, like she wasn't expendable. She was the only one on the ship who was not expendable, right? And like, and presumably everybody else died just to make sure we could get Aster where we needed her to be. And that's a fascinating dynamic, especially when you layer it with Aster's own belief that like something larger drew us here. We were meant to be here, right? Because she really doubles down on this idea that she and Halen are connected through all of this. And there's this obvious like tension rising between them, not like angsty tension, but like affectionate tension, right? Between the massage scene, their bonding at the beacon to begin with, even Halen's response when he finds she and Coley like with their little makeout session underneath the GWB there. Like this dynamic is one that I'm intrigued by. I really appreciate that we've like not gone full romantic three episodes in, but also like I can feel it building and it's like sweeping me off my feet a little bit, despite my like predilection to resist it, Corey.
Yeah, if it comes, it comes. And I'm sort of in that mindset too, but I'm glad that it hasn't for so long. And I'm glad that they are both currently adamant that there is nothing happening. And without getting too deep into just core concept book spoilers, not like plot specific, but like just general outcome specific spoilers, I do think that it's important to understand that they have a bond beyond romantic, right?
Yes.
They are truly connecting emotionally together and understanding each other to the point where Aster just genuinely knows. She doesn't just believe, she knows that Halen is like being genuine about his purposes here and about the stories that he's telling her. And I think that's incredibly important. So if we layer off of this and it does turn romantic, it's okay. They have really great chemistry together. I'd be okay with seeing where that goes. But I'm also totally fine if we keep it here, frankly.
Me too. I'm like a big proponent of like, you know, the platonic love that develops on like a lot of these shows. I love like a Cassian Andor Jyn Erso relationship between a couple of characters. And I do have to say, Steven James is a young, like a relatively unfamiliar performer to me, at least. This guy's really holding his own in these scenes with Lena Headey. Like she's such a powerhouse and she's so like, it just feels like such a second skin. Like this is a woman that portrayed a really prominent, beloved, hated slash character for a long time. And it could be easy to imagine that it's hard to divorce her from the Cersei Lannister of it all, but she just is Aster to me. It's such a different dynamic that she really embodies this character terrifically. And I think that Steven James like really holds his own. There is like this awesome electric chemistry between the two of them in their scenes together.
I totally agree. And they both do such a tremendous job. I can't speak to the Game of Thrones of it all. I think I've watched the first six episodes of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, you're better off. That's
yeah, for sure. I've heard that. So, you know, I mean, I think she was in some of those episodes, but ultimately I, you know, didn't have a huge opinion of her prior to this show, but she is phenomenal. Absolutely. And so is he. Like, they both work incredibly well together. They have this amazing dynamic. I'm buying it, right? Like, I'm leaning in, and it's great.
Yep. Anything else, Corey? Like, I feel like there was a bunch of stuff we jumped around to. There's a lot of like little details that we're kind of like overlooking, but anything else particular that you want to dig into before we part ways?
Yeah, I pulled some little minor details.
Awesome.
Again. So I thought maybe we could go through some of those. Also, I did want to mention, in terms of answering some of our questions from previous podcasts, they sort of imply that the hack is fixed.
Yeah, they kind of do, huh?
So I kind of wish that I got to see like a little more like very clear confirmation, but there's a couple things. First of all, when they come into contact with the dark matter that's stopping them from leaving the beacon is red, yep. Which already implies that it's working better than it used to, but also just generally speaking, as they're just talking through these things, it seems like Coley wouldn't have even been able to get there. So ultimately I think that it's fixed, and he sort of talks about the hack as if it's past tense. So hopefully all good there. Maybe we are not going to go back into that beat anymore now that the records are dead, but I'd be still curious to know a little bit more about that.
Do we imagine that it's because of Harmony being here? Like, with the incorporation of this highly sophisticated AI, there's a way for it to kind of get fixed off screen and it's not that big of a deal? Like,
it's possible. I mean, Harmony definitely doesn't know everything about the beacon. It was very clear in Bart's absence that it was hard to get things going. But I could see, especially Bart wasn't offline this whole time, I could definitely see some things like being done to sort of stop the hack because we got two really smart AIs on board the ship.
Yep. Fair. Yep.
So yeah, sort of behind the curtain thing that I thought, you know, maybe we'll learn more about it, but should explicitly mention because I kept complaining about it.
No, it's a good call. I kind of like acknowledge it too. At the point where they almost are like sunning themselves in the light, that first scene at the GWB, I really love the way it went because I think that there's like a physical response that we could relate to of the two of them like stripped down to their tank tops, just like up against the red light as it's pouring out of the beacon. And then we realize like, oh no, they're totally getting high from the pulse emissions.
Yeah.
Of this thing. Yep.
Yeah, good old Gwib. That was one thing. I also wanted to mention last podcast, I mentioned that that box that he powered himself on from was from a Sergeant Kai Nielsen. Well, it turns out that's him.
Yeah.
He's Kai Nielsen. He's Halen Kai Nielsen. That's his full name. We learned that from his service record. So I thought it was somebody else. Turns out it was his box the whole time.
It was throwing me off. We talked a little bit last time about having fun pausing the digital screens. Like, I definitely paused his records and zoomed in. It was like, what's going on here? I want to see the details of the final combat operation. And they keep referencing Kai, which is kind of interesting in terms of the naming conventions that they like hone in on his middle name that he's hailing Kai Nielsen. But I did love the clarification. And then even back to the Coley emergence, there's a point where I love what you're identified. Like, I'm one of these guys, Corey, that will complain in all of these fantasy shows, why is nobody wearing a helmet? You know, and I know why. It's because we want to see the pretty actors' faces. But nonetheless, I really love like practical props, like you identified, and the point that like Aster kind of tells him, like, she's got a way more expensive suit than you, buddy. Like, you definitely don't want to mess with her. The fact that she also has like this further iterated, upgraded technology is really interesting to me. But good catch on the Kai of it all, for sure.
Yep, and there was a blurb about Halen's life that I thought was really interesting. I don't know if you caught this one. It was only for half a second as the screens were sort of folding in on each other. But it mentions some things. First of all, a lot of the records for dates are like, you know, he was born in 2/15/12. We don't know what 12 it is, but I also noticed that they refer to it as plus 12. So they don't even say the millennium or the century in the date. They just call it plus 12, which I thought was interesting. But also, so, you know, it says he's the youngest son of, and they name his parents. He was born on Elgar II in the year plus 12. He had both of his parents were military officers. So he shuffled around between bases. And then this is the interesting part. At the age of 14, Nielsen was diagnosed with a rare and deadly form of neuroblastoma, rapidly appearing among military personnel formerly stationed at the planet named Globus Ung something. And then it says, see attached for medical records for his full cancer record.
Whoa.
Yeah, and then it says, a cure had yet to be found at the time, but the ISA was opening up a medical trial for active service members, so basically his parents were forced to enlist their son underage into the military so that he could receive this experimental treatment, and it worked. He led to a full recovery, and ultimately went on to, you know, continue serving in the military until, you know, he got, you know, he went AWOL. But I thought that that's a really interesting tiny little beat to hide in the split second, you know, text box in the show. I don't know. What do you think about that?
That is excellent, man. That's already so infinitely compelling, right? As we're like delving and plumbing the depths of all of these mysteries and these uncertainties that we're trying to get clarification on. This weird mineral that is glowing and is breaking down with this weird half-life. We watched Astro break pieces off of it that appear to almost like disintegrate and vaporize in the early episode there. Whether or not this is the onset of his cancer, what was going on at this planet? Is that where this stuff came from? Was it used in the treatment? Is that why we're looking for it? Why is it important? He was a child soldier and treated against his will. That's like, there's like 100 eggs inside of that one Easter egg, Corey. That's a really, really good pull. That's very interesting and insightful, and like really just kind of feeds into so many of the questions that I have about the uncertainty that we've got so far.
Absolutely. And then the other side of this is the actual combat report. Did you happen to read that?
Yes.
That one was up for a little longer.
Yes, the combat report was the one thing that I did really hone in on and like read the depths of. Yep.
And I think that tells us some clues as well, because in that report, it mentions that Halen, they engaged artificial gravity and conducted reconnaissance on an established QTA mining site.
Yep.
So it's a QTA mining site. Both of those things are very important, that it's a mining site and that it's QTA.
Yep.
And it was engaged by enemy plasma artillery, so they got into combat. So then it looks like, and I'm skimming through it here, but it looks like there was some cover fire. Halen and Gashad, the woman who was in Halen's sort of visions, they descended, they went down, and ultimately he instructed some of his people to flank right and advanced alone to the extraction point. So first of all, what happened to Gashad? You know, presumably maybe she was part of the crew that flanked right, I guess, but it looks like she dies in his vision, so I'm not sure about that. And then he goes alone to the extraction point under enemy fire. And then ultimately, there was anomalous dust plumes before recordings were interrupted. And then comms for further instruction from Halen were not returned. And so that's pretty much all that it says about what happened, because it says he wasn't heard from again.
Yep.
After that. So he basically, they're saying he abandoned his team. He said, flank me. And he just didn't show up. But to me, they're at a mining site. It's the QTA is interested in the mining site. There's anomalous dust. He doesn't speak to them. We've already seen him pass out when he comes into contact with these minerals.
We sure
have. I think that the minerals were probably on this planet. Or some version of them, right? That the QTA were dealing with. And in coming into contact with the extraction point, he passes out. He can't give the commands to his crew, and then they die.
Yeah, there's so much cool stuff there. I mean, just the idea of him advancing alone, I can't help but think of Lieutenant Spears from Band of Brothers, like an absolute legend. But then the notion, I think that you're spot on of the anomalous dust plumes. And I think that this connects really interesting with the point that Coley makes to Astor about how he traveled, whatever it was, 40,000 leagues across space, right? It was like a vast, vast, vast distance. This was not the most convenient place for him to come from. And that leads Coley to the inference that he came here to get the rocks. Why else would he come here specifically?
Right.
But there is such an interesting inference there. If we imagine that the rocks, this might be their origin point. Like, did Solomon go there? Who brought him here? Was he just kind of like bundled up in whatever kind of resistance force was at this mining station that they like took his ship and piled the minerals and his corpse on there? It's really a lot of questions. And again, feeding into some of like the speculation that we've had thus far.
Absolutely. And we just don't know where Solomon got the rocks from. So to your point, he was going to an extraction point. Maybe they got extracted. They were taken somewhere else. And then Solomon found them and Halen, for all we know.
Yep.
Or maybe the rocks called out to Halen because he had this connection with them on the planet. Yep. And he just happened to wander space until he found them again. Like, it's really hard to know. But it seems like it's not just Halen wants to steal the rocks. It seems like there's something interesting going on that I think we're going to uncover really soon.
Yeah, like vague, I guess, like allusions to potential spoilers. I'm really just speculating here.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
We've seen that Solomon is played by Steven Root, who's a pretty notable actor. And I like, you know, when you ask this question of will we see the accident? Are we going to go back and review footage? I like am very much in this mindset of are we going to get flashbacks, like deeper flashbacks? I'm talking like full scenes, not like staggered frames of visions, right? And I'm really curious whether or not we're going to get like or how much clarification we're going to get on some of this past, because it seems like there are answers to some of the questions we have now that are kind of come from behind us and from behind these people's lives. Like, there's already just so much inferred in all of that.
Agreed. And I think that we probably will see more of it, especially because it's the same thing for Gashad, right? For the woman who's with him, and very clearly cast someone in this role that I think we're going to see more of. And I think that they can use Halen's flashbacks, visions from the minerals, as sort of a way to flash back to those scenes even further. But they also can use either footage or just maybe they'll just flip the script and just give us a flashback to what happened with Solomon. I do think that it'll come. You know, we talked about how this is more of a mystery, just like how Silo was more of a mystery than in the book. And I think that this is going to be a little bit of that. Like, once we get a little bit more clarity into what's actually going on, that might be a perfect time to dive us deep into what happened with Solomon, what happened on the battlefield that day. And we'll dig deeper into this stuff.
Yeah, good call. I'm excited to see where it is going. The show's got its hooks in me good now. Like, same. I enjoyed those first two episodes, but this one, again, there's just this vibe between the three of them, and I really was kind of impressed by how well we threaded the needle in terms of the gambit of Coley's story, just in and out one episode. As much fun as the Wreckers were, they were a little bit more archetypal characters, right?
Sure.
They weren't necessarily, like, the deepest, and the fact of, like, it was immediately riveting to me that, like, wait, Astra knows this woman. Wait, they're close. Wait, this is their team. Like, there just were so many moments of like excitement for me as the revelations kind of came on pretty quickly. Beacon 23 already confirmed for a season 2, Corey. So that's exciting. We got a little job security, but I find it just exciting in terms of the depth of the story here and like where we're going to go with it, you know, like how much they're kind of going to be able to do with this. There's so many shows recently that we delve into a season and there's this big uncertainty as to whether or not it's coming back, and you know there's more story to tell. I've been really critical of a couple of major properties recently that feel cynical in the way they're presenting information because they're just setting up the next project,
right,
and it doesn't feel like they're honoring the fact that like we've got 8 episodes now to tell a story now. And so I don't know, I'm really excited by Beacon 23 so far. I think it's been a very strong start in 3 episodes.
Me too. I am super excited for it. I'm getting more and more interested to just dive in, hit that next episode every single time, and so far I have really loved it. You know, I'm a nitpick for this stuff, and I really have not found much to nitpick. The biggest nitpick I have is one time his service record spelled his last name wrong. You know, like, that's my nitpick. Like, we got it right like 5 out of 6 times, but one of the times they spelled Nielsen with an O instead of an E. And I was like, oh, I got you. Like, but to be fair, maybe that's just how they entered it into a service record. It could be like an in-lore typo, right? So
Human error, still consistent in the far future.
That's right. You can't auto-correct that because you could have both spellings, so you can see it.
Oh, I love it. That's really good. That was episode 3 of Beacon 23, Corey. We'll be back in 1 week's time. Until then, where can people find you?
Yep, you can find me on many social platforms at Cavix, C-A-V-X, and as mentioned previously, you can always find me at the Post-Show Recaps Patreon Discord, as Cavix, Corey B. on there as well. Would be happy to chat up your thoughts on this or many other shows out there that we cover, even if I'm not behind the wheel or behind the one of the wheels of the podcast. So yeah, how about you, Rich?
I'm at DM Philly in all the places. You can catch me as well on the Patreon Discord. We got the Beacon 23 channel cooking over there, patreon.com/postshowrecaps. $10 a month level gets you full access to our very robust Discord over there, where we're talking about a lot of TV. You can catch me playing some D&D with some friends of ours over on Twitch, the VODs for all that stuff on YouTube of the same name. I'm talking about Yellowstone every week with Grace Leader. We're breaking down Tales from the Loop, Grace, Ariel, and myself. We just finished up our Fall of Rome coverage. Grace and I got together last week to talk about the 2000 Ridley Scott film Gladiator, a couple of centuries out past the Rome HBO show that we covered through the month of October. Having a good time out here. So we will be back in 1 week's time talking about Beacon 23, episode 4. But until then, just remember, if your ship was destroyed by your company, they probably don't trust you.
Visit Rivers Casino and Resort, the Capital Region's ultimate entertainment destination. With live table games, a winning dining experience, live entertainment, and so much more. Don't miss our $10,000 collect and go drawing on Friday, April 27th at 8 p.m. 10 guests will be drawn for the chance to win their share of $10,000 cash. Earn entries all month long by playing your favorite games or participating in our $50,000 collect and go sticker challenge on Thursdays and Fridays. Good times are always on the table at Rivers Casino and Resort. Must be 21 plus to gamble. Gambling problem? Call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY.